Please silence all electronic devices.
Members, the nurse of the day today is...
The job we have as legislators is to decide where the lines are.
It is a very sacred and holy institution.
I'll move to amend the bill.
Even the old folks in Devon knew.
He said, hey, ain't you Jesse Harris? And I couldn't deny that. I said, yeah.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
While I do not believe I did anything illegal or ever thought I was doing anything illegal...
You're fired.
North Carolina General Assembly Act.
Any further discussion or debate?
This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Immigration was a big story through the now concluded short session in the General Assembly, and while nothing much ended up happening in a lawmaking sense, we did learn more about some possible strategies that Republican leadership may employ if the federal government doesn't deal with it in the future. Also, North Carolina Republicans are running either to or away from Donald Trump, and legendary figures are leaving the General Assembly. I'm Dave DeWitt, Managing Editor for News at WUNC, and I'm here with Jeff Tiberi, Capitol Bureau Chief.
Hello.
And Jorge Valencia, Capitol Bureau Reporter.
What's up?
Jorge, let's begin with you. Your immigration story that aired this morning, and we're recording this on Friday, was at least for me a great explainer of the many different facets of how undocumented immigrants here in North Carolina deal with everyday life, how they interact with police, and how police interact with them, and how Republican leaders in the General Assembly may want to deal with illegal immigration as an issue in the future. Give us a short summary of the story you did and why you wanted to tell it.
The crux of the story this morning was about how facing the fact that the federal government has been at a standstill with immigration laws, and we've got more than 13 million people who are living in the country illegally. States have taken it on their own to somehow address that issue. And here in North Carolina, I think that you could see overall the approach over the last five, six years from some of the more conservative members in the Republican Party that is in the majority is to basically make life as not easy as possible for people who are living in North Carolina unlawfully, with the premise being that if it's not nice to live here, then people won't want to come here. Mm-hmm. So that is the crux of it. And then more specifically, we looked at this case of a proposal that we had this year in which lawmakers wanted to stop the use of these ID cards that are issued by community organizations so that it's harder for people to live here.
Right. And so police can use these identification cards that people have to help understand who they're dealing with and have an understanding of while they can't get – people can't get driver's license, they may not get state-issued IDs. They do have an identification card that allow them to do simple things.
Yeah, and if I can just really quick give you a tiny little bit of background that we didn't have time for in the feature. This is just part of a progression of people trying to just simply identify themselves as saying, my name is Joe Smith.
Right.
Now, we did have in North Carolina did issue, I don't know if it's correct to call them driver's licenses or driver's permits to people who were living here unlawfully. And they didn't have to show something that proved citizenship. And that ended somewhere in the 2000s. Part of it was because the state saw that there were people from other states who were coming here just to get those cards. Mm-hmm. Then afterwards, what we had once that stopped being that was no longer in use, people started using registration cards from their consulate. This is just something that they can carry around so they can show at the pharmacy. Now, as of last year, the General Assembly said that cannot be used anymore, and no government agency can take any identification that has not been issued by the state of North Carolina or by the federal government, with one exception for the police. Police can look at these documentations just to be able to ascertain that this person who they pulled over or somebody who may have been privy to a crime or maybe somebody who approached them is in fact Jane Doe.
Right, who they say they are.
Yeah,
right.
And so a lot of community organizations have continued to issue these cards, and some of the people who are spearheading the effort to control immigration in the state were not too happy about it.
It's a fascinating feature. We're going to run it at the end of the podcast here for anybody who didn't get a chance to hear it. And so what's interesting about that, beyond the things you've already mentioned, is sort of the way states are trying to deal with issues that the federal government has not yet dealt with. So let's look a little bit ahead, obviously, in the middle of a presidential race. We've got two candidates with differing views of all kinds of different things. They also have different levels of support from members of their own party here in North Carolina. The Republican National Convention begins next week in Cleveland, Jeff. No one from North Carolina scheduled to speak, as we know right now. The New York Times had a partial list, or at least some folks on it, although it seems that some of those folks were surprised to find out they were on that list. Does it surprise you that nobody from North Carolina is playing a more prominent role in that convention?
I would respond with a question to either of you if you wanted to answer it, and if you don't, I'll just move on. Who would that be? I think the who would that speak
from here?
Yeah.
Maybe Dan Forrest. You know, Dan Forrest spoke before. Now, he's not a major, you know, lieutenant governor, not a major figure, but he's enthusiastic. He's very pro-Trump. And you know, Renee Elmers, who already lost the primary, would have been a potential one, too. But
Jorge, go ahead. Sorry.
And he and Dan Forrest, just, you know, just a side note, you know, for anybody who doesn't remember this, Dan Forrest was the highest ranking candidate, if that's the right way to put it, who attended the most recent Donald Trump rally here in North Carolina.
Yeah, and I think Forrest is a logical answer to that question. However, Forrest isn't up for the governor's seat. I don't think at this point in time he's a national figure.
And
this isn't a knock on Dan Forrest as much. I think it is kind of a fact of the matter of current Republican politics. He's just not a big enough of a deal to garner a speaking spot at the convention. Perhaps he will in 4 years. As for Elmers, I mean, she's a lame duck, right? I mean, Elmers lost in the new congressional districts to Holding, and
if she had won, she might.
She might, I think that I think that's a reasonable
Ted Budd,
possibility.
Ted Budd could have been Ted Budd, who is the Republican nominee in the 13th district, who has a background that is somewhat similar to Donald Trump. He's an outsider. He's a businessman. He's never held any political office. Right. People seem to have an appetite for that. Maybe Ted Budd could be somebody like that, but you know, Ted Budd's not a name yet.
Yeah, but other conventions they've used to sort of use as jumping off points for younger candidates.
Sure.
This list didn't include really anybody who would fit that category. Mm-mm. This is a different convention, just like it's been a different campaign.
It's a different day in Republican politics, by and large, with candidate Trump ready to take the nomination. I think that if you think about North Carolina Republicans, there are two that rise to the top who are in election cycles here, which are Governor Pat McCrory and U.S. Senator Richard Burr. McCrory has thus far distanced himself from Trump at every turn possible. He has not yet appeared with Trump on the stump, and I think that we're going to see, as we tend to in general elections, candidates coming back toward the middle. McCrory, of course, was elected 4 years ago with independent support, with I think some left leaning just inside of the boundary of Democrat. Yeah, the moderates. And Burr, I think Burr's an interesting one. I spoke with David McLennan, who's a political science professor at Meredith College, earlier today, and one of the points he made about Burr is that he's going, but he's not speaking. And the professor raised the point that it's possible Burr was offered a speaking spot. We don't know that. Yeah. I don't know if we ever will. But here's Burr, who's in a relatively competitive race at this point with Deborah Ross, former state legislator. And I think he's playing this game of how close do I get? How much of an arm's length do I keep between Trump and myself in terms of positioning and this political gamesmanship? So, no, there are no North Carolinian speakers, at least at this point. McCrory not going. He didn't go 4 years ago when he was campaigning to be governor. That was the campaign in Tampa. Burr has gone for a while. Burr's a relatively powerful Republican Senate, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he's head of the Intelligence Committee. So I think some of Burr's attendance has to do with his history. Some of it has to do with we're in this time when, intelligence is a pretty big topic of conversation as we deal with unfortunately, these ongoing attacks. So they're split. Tillis, the junior senator who's not in an election year, will be there. And then the delegation, I think there are 10 House Republicans from North Carolina. And at last check, I had heard from 9 of them. I think 5 are going, 4 are not, and 1 was kind of up in the air. No major surprises. George Holding has, not been aligning himself with Trump. He will not be there, as an example. Renee Elmers will be there. So no major surprises. But
Walter Jones never goes.
Walter Jones never goes. I talked to one of his press secretaries, and she said, no, he doesn't. He doesn't go. I don't know the last time he went. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see some of the speeches and also not only what happens inside of the convention hall, next week, but also if anything transpires outside. We've seen some pretty heated debate and protests surrounding Trump. What is that going to look like? I mean, we're going to have shades of conventions from 40, 50 years ago. 68 in Chicago comes to mind when there are all those riots outside and hurt the Democratic Party. So we'll see.
Yeah, and it was interesting, too, sort of along the same lines on the other side with the other party. Jorge, you attended the Obama-Clinton event about a week and a half ago, and we are seeing Democrats rallying to Hillary Clinton across the board now. We're seeing the high level running for office, Cooper, running for governor. He's clearly on board the Clinton train.
Yeah, so I had suspected, I think we had suspected that the relationship between Roy Cooper, who's the Democratic candidate for governor, and Pat McCrory, the Republican incumbent, was that they were going to just try to keep a safe distance from the person who's at the top of the ticket. And that is clearly no longer the case because Roy Cooper was one of the people who introduced Clinton and Obama.
It will be interesting to see, you know, that involved Clinton and Obama, that event. So the president, whose popularity is rising, especially with Democrats, and Clinton, whose popularity is wherever you think it is, it's not very high. But, you know, if Clinton comes to this state, which she most likely will between now and Election Day.
Yeah, at least a couple of times.
Yeah, how closely will that, you know, if it was the president and it was Clinton. Now if it's just Clinton, it would be interesting to see how closely.
Yeah, and same goes for Deborah Ross,
yep.
who's a Democratic nominee for Senate.
Quick interjection. I saw this this morning in my email. I think this is worth sharing. A new poll shows the devastating toll Clinton's email scandal is taking on her image following the FBI's damning findings about her conduct. A whopping 92% of voters believe she either broke the law or exercised bad judgment with her secret email server. Now, full disclosure, that came from somebody with the state GOP party, but rarely do you see a poll where there's 92% anything these days.
So, right.
Just to throw that out, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of people. I mean, Clinton's campaign is warm, like coffee that you've left out for 12 hours at this point. It's
right.
It's not hot. It's,
and we haven't
smoke.
Seen a lot of like very recent North Carolina polling. I'll be really interested to see what we've seen. Some national polls come out in the last couple of days that show the race tightening pretty dramatically. We don't know a whole lot about North Carolina other than North Carolina is going to be super close in the fall for the presidential campaign. And the other thing that I found was really interesting, and I'll move on after this, but somebody pointed out on Twitter that McCrory got about 100,000 or so more votes than Romney did in 2012. That's pretty interesting. And I think that'll be very interesting to watch to see how many more or less votes McCrory gets than the Republican candidate Donald Trump in this election and how that works. I mean, you know, we think of people voting straight ticket almost. That happens certainly for the majority of people, I think, probably. But, you know, I think you may see some people jumping off that straight ticket voting more than usual. So. All right, moving on to back to the state legislature. Really quickly, this is a trivia question, and it's for you, Jorge. Ready? Two legendary, iconic individuals are leaving the General Assembly on this very day. Who are they?
Tom Apodaca, Senate Rules Chairman. The other one, I don't know who else resigned today. I mean, I can guess because there's some high-profile people.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Bob Rucho?
No.
Skip Stam?
Not today. Mm-mm. Not today.
All right, I don't know. You got me.
Jeff, do you know?
Any other guesses?
So this is a Republican?
I think that's unknown.
We don't know. And it's not important.
Who stepped down today?
Today.
Stepping down.
Last day is today.
Which chamber?
Both.
Yeah.
Okay, so I already got one. Somebody sent it. Sorry. Somebody's in the House.
No, it's not somebody in the House. This person is not in either chamber, but they're a legendary figure in the General Assembly who's stepping down today.
I don't know.
Come on, I think you do know.
It's you, Jorge. Come on. This is Jorge's last day here at WUNC covering the General Assembly. He's leaving us to go to Mexico City to cover Mexico City for KJZZ, the affiliate in Phoenix. Jorge, we're going to miss you, not only just for your journalistic coverage, but your lack of trivia knowledge. I want to ask you a couple questions.
Is this going to be a recurring thing, by the way, to do trivia every week?
No, we're just doing it today on
your should do it. If you do trivia every week,
we'll have you call in.
You can do a call in. In the name of Clint Eastwood, we're going to leave an open chair for you moving forward for these podcasts.
That was a bizarre moment.
It was a bizarre moment.
That was a bizarre moment. So let me just ask you a couple quick questions. You've covered the General Assembly for how long? How long have you been?
3 years.
3 years. What give me a couple things of what you're going to remember, whether it can be sort of big things, whether it can be moments. What are you going to remember about being in that building?
The unpredictability. I think that reporting on it is sort of trying to manage chaos, especially when you get to the busier moments. And maybe from the beginning of the session when there's this burst of energy, and then towards the end when lawmakers are trying to just rush everything through. And you can sort of predict when some things are coming, but really anything can change on a dime. So that's one thing that I'll remember.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, what are you going to remember about Jorge's covering the General Assembly?
I said this yesterday in a staff send-off. First, I do want to just briefly note that Jorge, I think, is probably a little mad at us right now because we scooped him. He's still yet to make his own departure announcement.
Yeah, I haven't told
via Facebook or Twitter. So you have until this podcast drops in the early afternoon.
That's right. Great.
So one thing I said this yesterday to some of our colleagues. Hopefully you're fine with me sharing it again or not embarrassing you, or maybe you just think it's boring. But one of the things I said is that when you move through the General Assembly to go from point A to point B, inherently takes a little bit longer when you're with Jorge. Because if you're going from the cafeteria back to the press room or from the office building to the Senate chamber, whatever it is, you often get slowed down because Jorge is going to stop and chat with somebody, whether that's a lobbyist or a lawmaker or a flack for somebody who is in office, whoever it is, somebody who's in the building. And I think this is a testament to your ability to work the beat. And we talk about beats in journalism, now whether you're a basketball reporter or an
cops
environmental
beat,
reporter.
I used to have a cops beat.
A crime beat.
Job.
Right. And, you know, you develop sources, you
it's
develop
all relationships.
People. It's relationships. I mean, it's one-to-one and understanding what's going to happen, what is happening, how it affects people, and, you know, how that changes the dynamic, how things cultivate shift moving forward.
And it's the difference between covering that building and being in that building and not being in that building and trying to cover from afar. Mm-hmm. The relationships, you know what's coming, what's more likely to come, what's not going to happen.
Right.
But
it's that depth of seeing what's going on, the boots on the ground. And that's one thing that I will miss. I think, what was the question? What am I going
to
miss about Jorge?
But it wasn't because you guys got lost on your way to places and Jorge
I did spend like my first session there just literally looking for the bathroom.
Yeah.
For 3 months.
It's not an easy building. It's not intuitive or things.
It's almost a maze. It is a confusing building. So did I sufficiently answer your question?
I think it gets to a bit of the heart of what kind of journalist you are, and this also does. Here's what I'm going to miss, and I think listeners are going to miss it too. When you covered really important stories that were not in that building, the Chapel Hill shootings, Akil Dankens shooting, and you covered those with such great humanity, in a way. And I think it's really easy when you're covering events like that to just give the facts. Here's this. Here's that. You always found moments, humane moments in those really difficult stories, and I think that is a really tremendous quality. I know you're going to take it to your next job, and I think we're going to miss that here. I mean, I've only been your editor for a couple of months. I've really enjoyed the process. I've really learned a lot from you as a journalist, and that humanity, that's part of, you know, whether you're bumping into people walking through the General Assembly or whether you're just going into a difficult situation, having to talk to people, your ability to do that is I think, one of your greatest strengths.
Thanks. I mean, that's just like what I love about being a journalist, that it just gives you agency to learn about a lot of different aspects of a geographical area or about just like humanity in general. And so for example, in these two cases that you mentioned, those are just very, very, very tragic things that happened. And you're kind of privy, you know, based on maybe the motivation of who might have been a perpetrator in that case or on the reaction of the family members when it happened, or people who were not connected to that person but had like an emotional connection to it. I mean, you learn a lot about like a community that way. In the same sense, I think covering the General Assembly, I mean, you learn a lot about a state, especially in a state such as North Carolina, in which the Senate and the House have so much power. And it's also just, it's so much fun just to get to see the different personalities that are in this building. That's why I just know for sure that covering the North Carolina General Assembly is just so much more fun than covering Congress, because you have people who are a lot of times really blunt about what it is that they want and how they're going to do it. I mean, sometimes they're not. A lot of times there's a lot of obfuscation.
They're not
for
professional
sure.
politicians.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and they'll just say some things that a lot of times you're just like, oh my God, like somebody's actually saying this on the floor of the Senate on tape right now. The person who is retiring today, Senator Tom Apodaca, is a perfect example of that, because I think that if anybody who's listening to this or anybody who pays attention to state politics here and who wants to write nonfiction about it or wants to be inspired to write fiction about it, like, this is a guy who is a character out of a book. I mean, he's just so – I mean, the way that he goes about running traffic in the Senate is really interesting, because the guy – I mean, some people have called him – one of his friends called him a grizzly bear and a teddy bear, because he's super tough dude. But he'll coat things a lot with humor. And so even people who are not in his good graces, like, have respect for him, because he'll – you know, maybe he won't let you do what you want to do, but at least he'll, like, make you laugh along the way. And he's also got an interesting background of being a bail bondsman and, mm-hmm. and having been on the business end of a rifle before. So these are all the things that it's so much fun to be a reporter in general and to be a reporter here. In my 4 years that I've been living in North Carolina, that's how I've gotten to get to know the state. And it's a position of privilege, because you get a front row seat.
And it shows how great a reporter you are. You just know all those details. I mean, details are really an important function of and you don't get that unless you're there talking to people, and that shows you how great a reporter. Now, as great as you are with details, there are some times, every once in a while, that you slip up. One of the things that I'm going to miss is the term inside ballpark. You say this periodically, and I'll find it on tape. I'll see if I can play it. But there's a couple of times where on podcasts that you say, well, I don't want to get too inside ballpark.
And then I get inside ballpark?
No. The term is, Jeff,
inside baseball.
Inside baseball. It is not inside ballpark. That is not
right.
a term
okay.
that people use to
Thank
describe
you.
Anything.
Thank you. This is, like, very helpful for me. This is very, very helpful
you
for
you.
You
can consider this the last opportunity for us to help school
inside,
you as you
wait,
go.
Why did you wait till now to tell me that?
No,
talk to the editor.
I was told. Oh, well, first of all, I just really enjoyed you when you said it. It's like ballpark. I would if it was going into like a feature story, I certainly would.
Oh my God!
Podcast, we have a different level.
I struggle a lot with idioms, and I work really hard at them.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes when something's on or in or at a location, I struggle with mm-hmm. that. Come on, man, come me some slack. English is my second language.
Onside ballpark.
Onside ballpark. So you speak English, Spanish, French. And you've taught yourself some Arabic.
I'm working on Syrian and Lebanese Arabic.
And you've got two guys. I don't know. I won't speak for you, Jeff.
But that's a long-term investment.
I can barely speak English on a good
Español
day.
Es bueno.
And here I am picking on you, because you've got one thing wrong.
I need that.
I'm a
inside
terrible
baseball.
Linguist.
All right.
All right. I've got five quick ones for you. If we can just go back and forth. I don't want you to think about these. I want you to just
Man,
give
I'm
an
getting
answer.
Getting roasted now.
These are pretty innocent.
By the way, if anybody's listening to this, I had no advance notice of
he had
this.
None. That would not be
I was
fun.
Hoping we were going to be talking about Tom Apodaca.
And we did.
The time.
We did. Which lawmaker will you miss most?
Tom Apodaca. He's just the most interesting guy. I mean, a lot. I'll miss a lot of lawmakers for a lot of different reasons, but he's, I think, the most interesting guy.
Of all the stories you covered at the General Assembly, what was your favorite?
I don't know about favorite, but I think that a lot of the Moral Monday protests were really fascinating, just because of the many different groups that were converging on it, and or on, how do you I don't know, the many different groups that converged for protests, groups that a lot of times maybe wouldn't have had alliances. A lot of times you've got some pastors, some African American pastors, who you wouldn't obviously. Assume that they would be advocates for, let's say, for example, gay rights, but these are all groups who have sort of a common interest, and they've come together. You know, I mean, I was there the very first Moral Monday protest that I covered lasted until 4:30 in the morning, and it was when people were sitting in then Speaker Tom Tillis's office and wouldn't leave. So that's one thing that I'll yeah, that's very memorable for me. And then some of these recurring issues that you just see that is going to take lawmakers a long time to resolve, like, for example, Jordan Lake, which is something that's been a long time in the works, which you know, just looking at it, you know, on a day-by-day, it's kind of like watching paint dry. But if you look at it collectively, it's just really interesting how we, just in general as a community, address this issue of trying to balance environmental quality and then also the development, because North Carolina is an awesome state, so it's growing like gangbusters. Coal ash is another one that's going to be a long time in the making. Yeah, those are just off the top of my head.
So much for rapid fire. Yeah. Your go-to meal at either the legislative cafeteria or the legislature's snack bar?
Snack bar, grilled chicken with onion rings. That's what I get almost every single time.
If you could change one thing about the legislature, whether it's the building, its contents, we won't get into it necessarily its policy or politics, but if you could change one thing about, I mean, maybe the process. I'm leading here.
Just more like civic involvement. Just more, I think that the more constituents, voters are involved in it, I think that the better the process would be.
Last one. One thing you are very much looking forward to in Mexico City.
I am looking forward to reporting in my native language, which is something that I've never done full time before. I think that'll be a lot of fun. And I'm hoping that I will get to cover some of the issues that we've covered here, but simply from the very different perspective of being down there. For instance, something that we spent a lot of time on today and in recent podcasts is about some of our presidential future nominees. One of them, who is, you know, part of the, you know, centerpiece of his platform, is erecting a wall that's going to cost, like, I don't know, $10-11 billion.
Right.
And so I really hope that I get – some of my colleagues already covered the border at KJZZ in Phoenix. But I think that for Mexico City, I'll have a lot of opportunity to cover what that debate looks like from there.
I'm done. You're done too.
Yep.
See ya.
And so as Jorge Valencia officially goes from subscriber participant – or pardon me, from participant to podcast – subscriber.
All right, I will. Especially if you do trivia every week.
I will. If you forget about us little people in another country, if you don't listen anymore, we're going to be crushed.
Are you kidding me?
Yep.
Follow me on Twitter, by the way, at Jorge A. Valencia. I've never plugged that before.
We better edit that out.
I plug it here at the end. I'll plug it right now, actually. That does it for the WNZ Politics Podcast this week. Jeff, Jorge, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye.
Make sure to subscribe, like Jorge Valencia, to the WNZ Politics Podcast on iTunes and Google Play. You can follow both Jeff and Jorge on Twitter. Even though Jorge moves on, still follow him on Twitter. All the WNC Politics stories on air and online from all of our folks who work in politics and here at WNC will return next week. Thanks very much.
As Congress remains at an impasse over immigration, state governments have sought to address the issue on their own. In North Carolina, legislators have tried to make the state less welcoming to the estimated 350,000 people living here without proper documentation. Jorge Valencia reports on how some immigrants are using community-issued cards for identification purposes and how legislators have tried to stop them.
Let's start this story with one person.
Me llamo Luis Parra, soy de Guanajuato, Mexico.
Like many immigrants, Luis Parra left his home looking for prosperity. When he got here 20 years ago, he worked in landscaping and then in construction.
Now I do interior trim, which is more detailed, more precise, and I really like it.
And in a way, he's living his dream. He's providing for his children and his wife. He likes his work so much, he even watches TV shows about it.
Rough Cuts, The Woodwright Shop, which is carpentry, fine carpentry, documentaries, and a lot of interesting things. I really like PBS.
Parra is living in the U.S. illegally, and even though his children are natural-born citizens, it's often difficult for him to run even the most pedestrian of errands for them.
For instance, I went to take my son to the doctor, and they prescribe oxycodone. I don't know if it's the right name for him, but that they require an ID to give it to you.
Parra, of course, does not have a state-issued ID, so he had to go home and get his Mexican passport.
So I was kind of frustrated because the people in the pharmacy, they look at me like, where are you coming from? You know, like, are you from this planet?
Sure, he can laugh about it now, but for Parra, this is just one of many chores that are unusually difficult. So a few weeks ago, he applied for an ID card from El Centro Hispano in Durham. He had to show some other ID with his photo on it and proof of his address.
Buenos dias.
He and 300 others had to sit through an orientation with police at a high school auditorium.
Muy, muy poquito español.
Many people take the microphone and ask the police officers questions. Some tell the officers about uncomfortable encounters they've had with police. Others tell them about crimes they've witnessed. For Durham Police Captain D. Almont, this is a welcome audience.
Yeah, I want to hopefully allay some of their fears that they can't come to law enforcement for fear of not having papers and that immigration will be involved. And I just want them to understand that we're not immigration enforcers. That's not who we are. We're city municipal police officers who are here to protect and serve. They are a part of our community. We want them to be engaged with us.
But for many Republican lawmakers, this is not a welcome attitude. This year, state legislators considered penalizing cities that deprioritize the enforcement of federal immigration laws. They also considered prohibiting police from looking at community ID cards to verify a person's identity.
If you're going to be a law enforcement officer, you should enforce all the laws, not just the ones that are comfortable with you.
Representative George Cleveland is a Republican from Onslow County. For years, he has led the state effort to control immigration. He's a former Marine, and he likes to point out that one of his daughters-in-law is an immigrant from Honduras. He says he has no personal issue with undocumented immigrants.
Most of them are probably honest. Are, not probably. Most of them are probably, the word probably keeps jumping in there. But anyway, they're here to work and try to get a better life.
But
the problem is, they're lawbreakers. They're illegal. They've broken our country's laws, and they don't belong here.
Cleveland's philosophy can be summed up this way. He says the only people working in North Carolina should be people who are legally allowed to do so.
Our folks need to be taken care of first. To allow, and the state has allowed since the late 80s, illegals to come into the state, take up residence, and take employment away from our citizens, I think that's totally wrong.
And he has a blunt message for people living here illegally. I asked him what he would say to Luis Parra, the carpenter raising his children here.
If I met him, what would I say to him? You're the one that made this problem, not me. You're the one that came here illegally. You had children in this country that became citizens because of our Constitution. It's a problem that you made for yourself. You solve it.
For Parra and North Carolina in general, that solution is unclear. Cleveland's proposals didn't receive enough support to pass this year. State lawmakers will likely try again. Or they might wait to see if the new president takes on immigration next year. Jorge Valencia, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.